Joshua Banks, wearing a dress suit for the first time in over 2 months since he gave up practicing law to run his claim and try to find his fortune in the hills around payday, slapped his hand down flat on the desk behind which he sat, looking out at just about everyone who lived within 10 miles of the town. Trial was being held in the Golden Nugget Saloon and Poker Emporium, the largest structure in the town. The oldest and best of the many saloons and bars in the area, it was made entirely of wood instead of being a wooden front with a tent in the rear like most of the buildings in payday. Banks glanced over the crowd, most of whom were staring at Pearly with undisguised hatred or talking to their neighbors with fire in their eyes. These people had all at one time or another availed themselves of Doc Bentley's services and all had an interest in seeing his killer hang by the damn neck until dead. Banks shook his head. He was sure that most of the good citizens of payday thought this entire trial was a waste of time and that the murdering scum should just be hanged so they could get on about their business of pulling gold and silver out of the ground. He had no idea how in the world he'd be able to convene a jury that was even remotely fair and impartial, but he was damn sure gonna try. One of the reasons he'd elected to give up the practice of law was the corruptness of most of his fellow practitioners. Banks was a rarity among lawyers and even among men. He was an idealist who felt the guilty should be punished and the innocent freed. Unfortunately, in the few years he'd actively practiced law, he found the opposite was often the case, with guilt or innocence more often being a function of the amount of damn money the accused had rather than his guilt or innocence. He pointed at the first two rows of chairs that had been hastily arranged in front of his desk.
You men, get up and go sit in those jury chairs over there.
A couple of the men gave Pearly, who was sitting in a chair across the room next to his defender, Sam Hemmings, a withering look that showed they'd be happy to be the ones who sentenced him to die. Once the men had all taken their seats, Banks began the trial.
Now, we're gonna start this here trial. And if anybody in here gets the notion he can disrupt these proceedings by opening his big mouth, then he'll find himself on the outside looking in, and his wallet will be lighter by $25. Is that clear to everyone?
His question was greeted by silence. Banks turned to Sheriff Buck Tolliver, who was sitting at a table on the opposite side of the room from Pearly's.
You may begin your prosecution, Sheriff.
I'll begin by calling Jonas Slackmire to the stand.
The town's undertaker rose ponderously in his characteristic black coat and trousers and boiled white shirt, and he made his way to the front of the room, where he took a seat in the witness chair next to Banks's desk.
Now, Jonas, did you examine the bodies of Dr. Hezekiah Bentley and Blackie Johnson on the night of their deaths?
I did.
And what did you find?
Well, Blackie was stabbed once in the throat. Looked like the knife entered just below the chin and sliced the Adam's apple and cut the main artery to the head. He bled out like a stuck pig. There wasn't a teaspoon of blood left in the man's entire body.
Tolliver lifted a knife from the table.
Was this a knife you found sticking out of poor Blackie's neck?
Yes.
Tolliver then picked up Pearly's gun belt with its holster and pistol still in it and its empty knife scabbard on the rear of the belt.
Does this rig belong to the defendant Pearly, as far as you know?
Yes, I was told it was by you, Sheriff.
Tolliver held up the belt and holster and theatrically slid the knife into the scabbard on Pearly's belt, showing that it was a perfect fit.
Now, what about Dr. Bentley?
The doc was shot once in the chest. Appeared to be at close range as his shirt was all burned and stained with gunpowder.
When you examined Doc's body, was he wearing a sidearm?
No. Everybody knows Doc never went healed. He even told me once he didn't hold with guns. Said they were only good for two things, killing people and cracking walnuts. And he wasn't partial to walnuts.
That's all.
Just a minute, Jonas. I have a couple of questions for you.
Hemmings stood up and moved to stand in front of the witness stand.
Did you notice anything else about Blackie Johnson when you examined him?
No.
What I'm getting at, Jonas, is the smell. Did you smell anything unusual about Blackie?
No, nothing unusual. Blackie smelled like he always did, like he hadn't bathed in a month of Sundays, and like he'd drunk up half the liquor in the saloon that day.
So you'd say Blackie was drunk at the time he was stabbed to death?
Sam, you know Blackie was always drunk if he'd been awake more than an hour, so I guess I'd have to say he was pretty well lit at the time of his death.
All right. Now, how about the doc? Anything unusual there?
He didn't stink, if that's what you mean.
No, Jonas, that's not what I mean. Was there anything unusual about the body's position or anything else?
No, well, yes, there was one thing.
Oh?
Yes, the doc had a large bump and gash on the top of his head like he'd been pistol-whipped or something before he was shot.
You don't think his head injury could have come from falling down and hitting his head after he was shot?
No, it couldn't have been that. There was blood in his hair from the cut from where he'd bled, and the doc had a hole in his chest right through his heart from the bullet. He died instantly, so if he'd hit his head while falling, the wound wouldn't have bled because the heart would have already stopped pumping.
Was the head wound serious enough to cause the doc to be knocked unconscious?
Yes, I suspect so. Though it's awfully hard to tell with head wounds. They tend to bleed heavily, so even a small wound can look really bad if all you have to go by is the amount of blood.
So whoever did this knocked the doc out and then stood over him and placed his pistol against his chest and shot him to death.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far, Sam, though it certainly could have happened that way.
That's all I have.
I guess I'll have to call myself as the next witness, since I'm the only other one who was there that night and really saw what happened.
All right, Buck. Just get up there in the witness chair and tell us what you saw.
Tolliver took his seat facing the room.
Well, I was out making my rounds, and Blackie Johnson joined up with me. Like Jonas said, he'd been drinking some over to the saloon. He said he wanted to take a walk to get some fresh air. We walked down the alleyway behind the doc's house. We noticed the door was open, but there weren't any lights burning. Suddenly, we heard a shot, and we both pulled our pistols and ran into the house. When we ran into the parlor, we saw a figure in the dark standing over the dock. Quick as a wink, that man over there...
Tolliver pointed at Pearly.
Stuck a knife in Blackie's throat and shoved his body against me, knocking my gun out of my hand as he ran out the door. By the time I picked it up and chased him, he was a good 10 feet ahead of me and running like hell. I finally caught him at the end of the street and slapped him on the head with my gun and knocked him out. When I caught my breath, I looked in his pockets and found the doc's watch and ring and some cash money in them. I figure he was robbing the doc's house when the doc came home and caught him. He must have struggled, and he must have hit the doc over the head with his pistol before he shot him. And that's about it.
Sam, you got any questions for the sheriff about his testimony?
Buck, that story doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
What do you mean by that, Sam?
Well, first off, why'd you let a man as drunk as Blackie was go into a house with you to investigate a gunshot? That's not typical of the way you patrol our streets after dark, is it? In the company of a drunk?
I didn't exactly let him go with me, Sam. You know Blackie. When he asked to walk along with me, I wasn't exactly expecting a double murder. Far as I knew, we were just taking a walk in the evening air. And then when we heard the shot, we just both drew our guns and ran into the house without thinking much about it. Wasn't a lot of time for discussion on the matter.
And secondly, if my client had just shot the doc and was standing over him with his gun in his hand, why did he take the time to draw his knife and stab Blackie instead of just shooting him and you?
I'm damned if I know, Sam. Why don't you ask him?
I did, Buck. He says he didn't do it. So why don't you make a guess as to what would make a man pull a knife when he has a perfectly good gun in his hand?
I told you, Sam, it was dark in there. Maybe he had a gun in one hand and his knife in the other, and he just struck out with the hand closest to Blackie.
So, let me get this straight. Pearly is robbing the doc's house. The doc comes home and catches him, and they have a fight. Pearly pulls out his gun and his knife during this fight, hits the doc over the head and knocks him out, and then he stands over the body with his knife and gun in his hands and shoots the doc in the chest, making enough noise to wake the entire town instead of just reaching down and cutting his throat if he wanted to kill him. Is that what you think happened?
How the hell do I know what happened before we got there, Sam? All I know is we heard a shot and ran in to see what was going on. Blackie got stabbed, and that son of a bitch over there ran out of the room and down the alley until I knocked him out and found a bunch of Doc's things in his pockets. What went through his mind or why he shot the Doc instead of knifing him, I don't know.
I have no further questions of this witness, Your Honor.
I think we'll adjourn for lunch. Everyone back here at 2 o'clock, and I don't want anyone to talk to the jury during the break. And I don't want any liquor or beer served in this room until after the jury verdict is in.
When the trial resumed after lunch, Banks noted the crowd seemed to be in a much better humor, making him surmise a lot of them had drunk their lunch rather than chewed it.
Court is now in order. Are you ready to begin, Sam?
Hemmings got to his feet, and Banks could see the resignation of defeat on his face.
Yes, Joshua. Your Honor, the defense is ready.
Banks looked at Tolliver, who was sitting at his table with a smug, self-satisfied expression on his face that made Banks angry. It was all right to win a case, but you didn't have to look so all-fired happy about sending a man to his death, even a murderer.
Is the prosecution ready?
Tolliver gave him a nod and a wink.
Pearly, would you take the stand, please?
Pearly got up and walked to the witness chair, his stride long and confident, with no evidence of shame or embarrassment in his manner. He still had a thick cloth bandage on his head where Tolliver had hit him, and the wounds and bruises on his face were still colorful. But his expression was one of quiet confidence that he was in the right and nothing bad could happen to him.
Now, would you tell us what happened in your own words?
Well, the last thing I remember before waking up the other night was being up in the mountains with my friends. We was buying some horses from the Nez Perce, and I was out in the meadow when I fell off my horse and ended up getting snake bit in the leg and neck. After I killed the snake with my knife, I must have passed out. I've been told by you, Mr. Hemmings, that after I passed out and became unconscious, my friends brought me here to see the doctor. But I was asleep during all that time. The next thing I remember is waking up the other night in the dark and finding a man standing over me with a gun in his hand. At the time, he was going through my things that were laid out on a nightstand next to my bed. Of course, I didn't know where I was, and right then I didn't remember about being snake bit. All I saw was that big six killer the man was holding as the moon glinted off its barrel. Well, sir, the man evidently heard me wake up, and he turned and pointed his gun at me. I grabbed the barrel, and we wrestled around a bit until he fell backward and pulled me out of bed onto him. When we hit the floor, my belt and holster fell off the bedside table, and I saw the handle of my knife. I didn't know why, but I was weak as a newborn kitten, so knowing I couldn't hold the barrel that cold away from me forever, I grabbed the knife and jammed it in his throat. I managed to hit him in the neck, and he jerked back and fell down and died. When I tried to get up, everything went black, and next thing I remember is waking up in jail with a real bad headache and a pretty woman fussing over a cut in my face and head.
And that is all that you remember of the night the two men were killed?
Yeah. Like I say, I did kill the one man with my knife, but only because he was aiming to kill me. I never even saw the doctor that was trying to help me. And I ain't the kind of steal from someone bent on doing me a good turn. Or steal from anyone, for that matter.
So you have no idea who might have come in and killed Dr. Bentley?
Mr. Hemmings, I don't even know how I got my pants on. Last I remember, I was in some kind of nightshirt in a strange bedroom and laying in another man's blood.
That's all I have, Pearly. Buck, your witness.
Tolliver stood up at his desk and fixed Pearly with a hard, flat look.
I have no questions for this lying son of a bitch.
I object, Your Honor.
I know what I saw, and I saw the bastard standing over the doc's dead body. And I saw him stick his knife in Blackie's throat right in front of me.
I won't have any name-calling in this court. Now, if you're through with this witness, and if Sam has no further witnesses, then I'll give the case to the jury.
Hey, Joshua.
What is it, Bob?
Why ain't you calling Miss Rule to testify? Maybe she could tell you what she saw that night.
Miss who?
Janet Rule. She's the doc's aunt, and she was staying with him for a few days before he got killed.
Well, has anybody here seen or heard from this Miss Rule since the night of the murders?
I saw an older lady that night, Joshua. She woke me up and took a room at my hotel.
Why would she go to a hotel the same night her nephew was killed?
I don't know. Maybe she didn't want to stay in a house with two dead men in it.
Is she still there?
Nope. Paid her bill the next morning and took off. I ain't seen hide nor hair of her since.
She happened to say where she was going?
Nope. She just walked out of the lobby and disappeared.
Joshua, I'll try and find this lady, but evidently she don't have nothing to add or she'd be here to tell it. Why don't you let the jury be thinking on what they want to do while I go look for her? If she has something to say about that night that'll be helpful, then I'll bring her in.
I object, Your Honor. The defendant should have the benefit of this woman's testimony before the jury is released to deliberate.
I agree, Sam, but it's like Buck says. If she's in town, she sure as hell heard about the trial. And if she's not here, then she evidently doesn't have anything to add. On the other hand, if she's left town, there isn't anything we can do about it since she could be just about anywhere by now. If Buck can find her before the jury comes in with a verdict, then I'll allow her to speak. Otherwise, we go with what we have.
But
I've spoken. My hands are tied, Sam. There's nothing else I can do. Court's adjourned while the jury deliberates. You men go on over to the livery, and you can have your meeting there while you decide if this man is guilty, and if he is, what sentence you'd like to impose.
Joshua, it's almost dinner time. Can we go home and eat and then do our deliberating?
No, George, you can't. I'll have something sent over from the hotel dining room to tide you over until you've made your decision.
Sheriff Buck Tolliver didn't waste any time hanging around the courtroom after Banks sent the case to the jury. He practically ran out of the saloon and over to his office. His cronies Jeb Hardy and Kid Akins followed him at a discreet distance.
Damn, double damn!
Hardy and Akins walked in just in time to see the coffee pot carom off the wall.
My, the sheriff seems to have a burr under his saddle this afternoon.
Why the hell didn't you tell me the doc had some old maid aunt visiting him? You knew I'd been out of town for over a week when she came.
You didn't ask, Buck. Besides, how are we to know you're going to have some harebrained scheme to kill that feller that was lying unconscious over at the doc's place? You didn't exactly share your plans ahead of time with us, Buck, old man. And after it was over and all hell broke loose, I plumb forgot about the old lady being there visiting.
Tolliver began to calm down, realizing Hardy was right. He hadn't told his friends what had really happened at the docks until well after everything had gone horribly wrong and Blackie was dead.
Well, we have to find her and make sure she didn't see anything that night.
What do you mean we, Buck? Far as I remember, the boys and me didn't have nothing to do with that little screw-up you engineered at the docks. All we're being paid by the city to do is guard the town in case some of the defendant's hard-case friends try to shoot it up.
No, you're not on the hook for that, Jeb, but we've been making a pretty good living with our little operation against the miners in the area. It would seem to me that if I get arrested for murder and hanged, it might just put a crimp in your plans to retire within the next year with enough money to live out the rest of your days without ever having to work again. And if that's not enough of a reason for you to help me, you might want to consider that if I'm in jail, then the extent of my holdings and bank accounts are sure to come out. And if people around here start to investigate just how I accumulated all that money and all those claims, they might just stumble upon some other men in the town who have a lot more than they should in the bank and whose names are on some of the same mining claims as mine.
You're not threatening to spill the beans in our little arrangement, are you, Buck? Because if you are, simple way for the boys and me to protect ourselves from hanging would be to put a lead pill in your skull.
That might not be as easy as you think, Jeb. And it might keep you out of jail and your neck out of a noose, but it sure as hell wouldn't make you any money in the future.
Yeah. You're right, Buck. Why should we mess up a good thing, a scheme that's going to make us all rich?
I'm glad you see it that way, Jeb. Now, what you and the boys can do for me is to ask around town about this rule lady. She's either staying here, hiding out with someone, or she's left town. And the only way she could have left town is by train or by stagecoach.
Why do you need us to do the asking, Buck? After all, you're the sheriff around here.
Oh, I'll do some light snooping, kid. But I can't seem too anxious about it, or it might seem suspicious. If she did see me kill the doc and she finds out I'm asking around about her, she's sure to hightail it out of here first chance she gets.
Well, just what reason can I give for asking about some old lady's whereabouts?
Just tell him you owe the doc some money for a past treatment, and you want to make sure his family gets what's coming to him.
Or you could just tell him you're looking for a date to the next Sunday picnic.
After some more desultory discussion, the men on the jury all agreed to a decision. and the verdict was delivered to Joshua Banks at the office in the bank he'd been using during the trial. When he read the verdict, Banks shook his head sadly. He knew it was the correct verdict considering the evidence, but damn it all, sometimes you just got a gut feeling something was wrong. That was the way it was for him in this case. Everything pointed at Pearlie as guilty. Banks just couldn't bring himself to believe the boy was a stone-cold killer like he'd have to be to do what had been done. Banks put on his coat and hat and sent a boy who worked in the bank to go and get the sheriff so he could give him the verdict personally. He knew the sheriff wasn't going to like the part about the hanging being delayed until Miss Rule could be found, but Banks agreed with the reasoning behind it. There was another witness to the crime. It was only fair to the defendant for her to be found and questioned before he was hung by the neck until dead. Sheriff Buck Tolliver tried to hide his anger at having his hands tied when Banks summoned him and gave him the news of the verdict and its prohibition against staging the hanging until after Miss Rule had been found and questioned. He nodded, doing his best to keep his clenched jaws shut tight and not to rail against the stupidity of the jury for having the effrontery not to fully believe his testimony.
All right, Joshua. I'll send a wire to the sheriffs in Pueblo and Denver to be on the lookout for someone fitting Rule's description.
Don't take this as an insult to your word, Buck. It's just that the jury didn't seem to feel Pearlie was the sort of violent man who could do such cold-blooded murders.
And what am I, Joshua? A man who'd lie about something as serious as the Doc's murder? A man I've been friends with for several years?
Come on, Buck. You know you haven't exactly gone out of your way to be a friend of the people of this town. Hell, half of them cross the street when they see you coming down the boardwalk, because they know you got a bad temper, and they're half afraid you'll explode at them over some minor infraction.
That's the trouble with people, Joshua. They want someone tough enough to keep the peace and keep the desperados from overrunning their town. But then when they hire someone like that, they don't want him coming into their nice, neat houses and stinking them up with the scent of his dangerousness.
You're right, Buck. It's not fair. But it is the way people are. And you were aware of that when you took the office and the job.
Yeah, well, after all this is over, the good citizens of Payday might just be looking for someone else to keep their fat out of the fire.
Perhaps that would be a good thing, Buck. A good thing for this town and everyone in it.
He got slowly to his feet, grabbed his hat, and prepared to reconvene court and read the verdict to the defendant and the rest of the townspeople. All in all, he figured it was a fair and just verdict, especially given that it required Miss Rule to corroborate the sheriff's story about what happened before the young man could be hung. 2 days later, trail-weary Smoke Jensen and Cal Woods rode their horses down the main street of Payday. They were about frozen clear through from their journey through the mountain passes between Pueblo and Payday, where they'd slogged through snow that was clear up to their horses' withers.
You want to get something to eat first or head straight to the doctor's office?
Let's take a quick look in on Pearlie and make sure nothing's changed before we go to the hotel.
When they reined up in front of the doctor's office, they found the door locked and a black wreath of dead flowers nailed to the door.
I don't think I like the looks of this, Cal.
Me neither, Smoke. But Pearlie's just a patient of the doctor's. If he died, there wouldn't be no wreath on the door.
Smoke stood on the porch and looked around the town, wondering just what had happened in his absence. There was a sense of something going on, something that had changed the town and made its citizens seem more somber, less friendly. Finally, he crossed the street and stopped the man walking toward the general store.
Say, mister, excuse me, but could you tell me why the doctor's office is locked up in the middle of the day and why there's a wreath on the door?
You just got into town, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, the doc was shot down and killed a week or so ago, along with a sheriff's deputy who was knifed to death when he came to investigate the shooting.
What about the man that was staying with the doctor? The man who was unconscious from a snake bite?
Why, that's the fella that did the killing. He's in jail, convicted of two murders and scheduled to hang in the next week.
That's a lie.
Take it easy, Cal. We'll get to the bottom of this later. after we've had a chance to talk to Pearlie. Sorry about my friend, mister. He's a mite excitable. Now, did you say the accused man is in jail?
That's right, mister.
Cal turned and was headed toward the jail, until Smoke once again stopped him with a hand on his shoulder.
Hold on, Cal. Don't go off half-cocked.
Well, ain't we gonna see about Pearlie?
Yeah, but not looking like saddle tramps. The man said he wasn't scheduled to hang until next week. So we've got time to kind of scout out the situation before we go blundering into something without knowing exactly what we're facing. I don't like the mood this town is in. It's as if they're all heated up about something. The whole town feels like a powder keg about to blow, and I don't want us to get caught in the explosion.
You're right, Smoke. Something fishy is going on here because Pearlie wouldn't shoot nobody. Not unless they was going to shoot him first.
Let's get our horses taken care of and then get our rooms in the hotel and get cleaned up. After we've had a bite or two to eat and had some time to ask some questions around town, we'll mosey on over to the sheriff's office and see what we can find out from Pearlie.
You think they might have a hot bath over there?
They better. I'm going to shoot somebody myself.
Smoke and Cal walked into the hotel and placed their saddlebags on the floor in front of the desk. The desk clerk took one look at their road-weary appearance, dirty and dusty buckskins and unshaven faces, and he turned up his nose.
I'm afraid this is a quality hotel, gentlemen, and very expensive. If you desire less luxurious accommodations, you might try Barstow's tent round the corner.
Smoke took a wad of greenbacks out of his pocket that was large enough to choke a horse, and he held them in his hand, ready to count out what he needed.
And just how much would two rooms, a hot bath, someone to do our laundry, and a visit from a good barber cost in this town, sir?
That ought to cover it.
The clerk reached out and took a $25 bill off the top of Smoke's stack of money.
I just want to rent a couple of rooms, not buy them.
The clerk turned the register around and handed Smoke a pen. While Smoke signed the register, the clerk picked two keys out off the wall behind the desk and handed them to Cal.
Now, about that bath and the barber.
It'd take me at least an hour to heat up enough water for two baths, and unless you want to share the water.
Not hardly.
All right, then. I'll have a boy take things up to your rooms if you want to get a bite to eat while you wait, Mr.
Clerk whirled the register around and read the name.
Smoke Jensen?
That's right.
Is that the Smoke Jensen?
I'm the only one with that name I've ever come across. Cal, you're hankering to eat? Oh, to hell with it. Let's go see Pearlie while they heat up the water. Have those babs ready in an hour and have the barber standing by a half hour after that.
Smoke didn't bother to knock on the sheriff's office door. He just jerked it open and strode inside.
Yeah? Can I help you gentlemen with something?
We hear you got a friend of ours locked up here.
Would that be a man named Pearlie?
It would.
Tolliver got slowly to his feet, picking a ring of keys up off a nail in the wall behind his desk.
I might have to ask you to leave your weapons out here.
I don't think so. Nobody gets my guns while I'm still alive, Sheriff. And that includes you.
Look, Sheriff. If we wanted to start trouble, we'd have come in here with our guns in our hands, and you wouldn't have stood a chance. We just want to talk to our friend for a few minutes to find out his side of the story. The
jury has already heard his side of the story, and they didn't believe a word of it. But I guess it won't hurt to let you have a few words with him. But I'm going to be watching from the door, and I'm going to have an express gun in my hands. You try to slip that boy a weapon, it'll be the last thing you ever do.
And you point that gun at me, and it'll be the last thing you ever do.
Tolliver opened the door and pointed him toward the last cell on the row.
Who's that?
It's me and Cal.
Smoke, Cal. Thought you'd forgotten all about me.
Not a chance. Just took us a while to get the horses on the way to Big Rock and get back here to see you.
Pearlie, it's good to see you and awake, doing better. But what the hell happened to you to get arrested for murder?
What the hell happened to your head?
That was a gift from the sheriff, though I don't remember him much.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Pearlie told him how he'd awakened to find a strange man with a gun in his hand going through his things and how they'd struggled and how he'd ended up stabbing the man to death.
Was that the doctor?
No, evidently not. It was some man named Blackie Johnson, the sheriff's cousin and part-time deputy.
What happened then?
I don't rightly know, Smoke. I got off the floor and things started to go kind of crazy. I blacked out, and when I woke up, I was in jail with this gash on my head and a pretty woman fixing it up.
Leave it to Pearlie to fall into a bucket of crap and come out with a girl.
And that's all you remember?
Yeah.
What's the matter?
All I've been getting to eat is bread and a little soup. It's more water than meat.
The doctor said you needed lots of heavy beef stew to help you get over the snake bite.
Well, since they claim I killed that doctor, they ain't exactly been trying to follow his advice about my welfare.
We'll see about that. We'll sniff around town and see what we can come up with, Pearlie. You sit tight.
Do I have a choice?
You do like I said, Pearlie. Leave the worrying to us.
Say, Smoke.
Yeah.
There was something about the doc's aunt, Miss Janet Rule, who was supposed to be in the house that night. She disappeared, but she might know something about what really happened if you can find her.
We'll see what we can do, pal.
They went back into the sheriff's office, and he relocked the door to the cell block.
What's this I hear about there being a possible witness to the doctor's murder?
Where'd you hear that?
Never mind. Is there?
Yeah, I guess so. The doctor's aunt was visiting, and she might have seen something. But I got wires out to Denver and Pueblo, and I'm sure we'll find her, and she'll tell us your friend in there killed the two men.
Well, I hope you don't mind if we do some looking for her too, Sheriff.
Of course not. The more the merrier.
And just what is this I hear about the prisoner not getting anything but bread and water to eat?
The county don't have a lot of money to be spending on food for a man due to hang in a week.
Well, I'm going to pay to have a cook over at the hotel fix him 3 square meals a day and deliver them over here. Is that all right with you?
Sure it is. Of course, I might have to sample them meals, make sure they're all right for the prisoner.
And be very careful how you treat my friend, Sheriff. Very careful indeed. Because if he tells me you as much as touched him, or if I see any more evidence that he's been pistol-whipped, then you better never cross my path again.
Is that a threat, Jensen? Because if it is, I could arrest you and put you in jail right now.
I see you know my name, Sheriff. How is that?
I've seen your face on some old wanted posters.
My face hasn't been on a wanted poster in over 10 years, Sheriff.
I got a long memory, Jensen.
Good. Then you won't forget what I said about treating my friend right, will you? And I'm going to have a talk with the mayor about this hole in the wall and find out just why the town can't afford to feed its prisoners.
Tolliver locked up the jail and walked across and down the street to the saloon he'd seen Bubba enter a little bit earlier in the day. Bubba looked up and noticed Tolliver approaching.
Hey, Buck, old buddy. Well now, Buck, what's on your mind?
As Bubba raised a whiskey bottle to take another drink, Tolliver reached out and stopped him.
You might want to hold off on that stuff until you've heard what I have to say.
So, what's so damned important that you mess with my drinking?
I got a job for you, Bubba. And you can earn nice money if you can do it right now.
Uh-huh. Now that usually means you got some dirty work you want done, but you want to keep your hands clean.
Smoke Jensen and a friend of his just showed up over to jail.
Yeah, I heard. Nearly everybody in town knows that the famous gunfighter Smoke Jensen is in town, thanks to that little snot Samuelson from the hotel. But you was expecting that, weren't you?
Yes, I was expecting him to show up, but Jensen's suddenly talking about looking for the Rule Lady and finding out what she has to say about how the doc got killed.
And I bet you're afraid he'll find her before you do, and she'll spill the beans about how things really went that night.
That's right, Bubba. Now, he and his pal are staying over at the hotel. From the looks of them, they just came off a long trail ride, so I suspect they'll be cleaning up or taking a siesta for the next little while.
So, what's that got to do with me? He sure as hell didn't come to town to find out if I killed somebody and blamed it on a friend of his in order to get him hanged.
I'll pay you $100 to go over there, sneak up the back stairs, and put bullets in their heads.
Shut up, you fool. What's the matter with you this morning?
You want me to sneak into the hotel and kill one of the most feared gunfighters in the country and another man for a measly $100? You, the man with a half a million greenbacks in the bank, and me with not 2 dimes to rub together? I don't think so, Mr. Sheriff.
All right, Bubba. Just what do you think the job is worth?
$1,000!
You must be joking. That's more than most men make in 2 years.
I figure you can afford it, Buck, after all the money you made off my work the past year. And if it's too much for you, you can just mosey on over there and do the job yourself.
After all, it was your brother Jensen put in the ground, not mine.
It's still a lot of money for a couple of minutes' work, Bubba.
That's a lot of hombre you want killed, Buck. And it ain't like it ain't been tried before, and nobody's managed to plant the man yet. So I think for a risk like that, I ought to get paid big money.
All right, you son of a bitch. $1,000 it is, but you better do a good job of it and not let anyone see you.
I've been sneaking in and out of that hotel for years, Buck, old man. Now you just sit there and have a drink or two of my whiskey, and I'll be right back.
Nah, it's too obvious. I'll wait for you over at the jail.
Whatever you say, Buck. Just have my money ready and waiting for me.
You do this right, Bubba, and I'll see that you get made a full partner in Hardy's and my dealings. That'll mean more money than you've ever seen in your entire life.
I'll hold you to that, Buck.
Smoking Cal walked into the hotel lobby, and Joe Samuelson immediately raised his hand.
Mr. Jensen, your baths are ready, and I told the barber I'd send for him the minute you're finished.
What is your name?
Joe Samuelson.
Well, Mr. Samuelson, you've done a great job, and I'll be sure to tell your boss how helpful you've been.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. The bathroom's on the second floor, just down at the end of the corridor. There are two bathtubs there and a stove with hot water and a bucket on it. And I've instructed the boy to check in on you periodically, make sure there's nothing else you need.
I'll tell you what, Joe. It's worth another $5 to you if you get our horses taken down to delivery and rubbed down and fed plenty of grain for us while we take our baths.
Consider it done, sir.
Smoke smiled back, and he and Cal climbed the stairs toward the second floor.
Why are you so nice to that man?
Because he did a good job for us, Cal. And because hotel clerks tend to be gossips, and he'll probably know as much about what goes on in this town as anyone. It won't hurt to be on his good side when we question him about this rule lady and anything else he might know about Dr. Bentley's business.
You think the real killer might be someone who had a grudge against the doctor?
I don't know, but I'm betting that Samuelson will know if anyone in town had a reason to want the doc dead. There are only a few reasons a man is killed in cold blood, Cal. Strong emotions like hate or love for money or profit or revenge for some past wrong done to the killer. We just have to figure out which one applies in this case, and we'll be halfway to finding out who really killed the doctor.
When they entered the bathroom, they were pleased to find it full of steam from the heated water in their tubs. Smoke tested the water with his hand, and then he grabbed the bathtub and eased it around until it faced the doorway. He slipped his Colt from its holster, laid it on the floor next to the tub, covered it with a small towel out of sight of the doorway, and then he got undressed and eased into the water. Cal, without watching Smoke, did just about the same thing, having learned from Smoke that safety is all about preparing for the unexpected.
You know, Cal, one of the greatest pleasures in life is relaxing in a steaming hot bathtub.
For you old fellas, maybe. As far as us youngins are concerned, most of the great pleasures in life involve a female with long hair and a pretty face and a trim figure to top it all off.
I may be old as you say, Cal, but I'm not dead. And I do remember those days, believe it or not.
Cal was about to reply when the door opened and a large, heavy-set man with a cloth mask made out of an old flour sack over his face burst into the room. He had Colt pistols in each hand and his eyes were flashing with malevolence.
So this is how the great Smoke Jensen ends his days, huh? Soaking his sorry ass in a bathtub.
You mind telling me who it is that's going to kill me and why?
As for who, the name's Bubba Barkley. And as for why, it's because you keep sticking your nose in other people's business. You messed with me once before, Jensen, and now I'm paying you back in spades.
What about me? Why are you gonna kill me?
When the man's eyes shifted toward Cal, both Smoke and Cal made their move.
You think he's got friends outside?
No, if there were more of them, they'd have come in here with him. They wouldn't have wanted to miss seeing us killed.
Cal glanced down at his now empty coffee cup he had knocked over while going for his gun.
Damn! Now I'm going to have to get out of the tub and get more coffee and another cigar.
While you're up, son, I could use a warming myself.
Even above the chatter in the saloon, Tolliver thought he heard the sound of gunshots from the direction of the hotel. He decided to pretend not to hear him and to wait for someone to come and get him. That would give Bubba more time to get away and would solidify Tolliver's claim to not knowing anything about what was happening. Suddenly, Joel Samuelson burst through the bat wings, his face pale and white.
Sheriff! Sheriff! There's been a shooting at the hotel!
Anybody hurt?
I don't really know. I didn't go upstairs to look. I just gotten back from the livery taking Mr. Jensen's horses over there, and I heard this god-awful commotion upstairs, and what seemed like a dozen of gunshots all happened at once. And then it got awful quiet, Sheriff. Not nary sound.
Well, come on then, Joe. I'll go have a look and see what's going on. And you say the shots came from Smoke Jensen's room?
Oh, no, sir.
The shots didn't come from Jensen's room? Where'd they come from?
Mr. Jensen and Mr. Wood weren't in their rooms. They were in the bathing rooms taking hot baths. It sounded like that's where the shots came from.
Oh.
With Samuelson so close behind him, he could smell the man's aftershave. Tolliver eased up the hotel stairs, his pistol in his hands for show. He really didn't expect to find a gunman there, knowing Bubba would be long gone by now. The hallway was still full of gun smoke and the heavy, acrid smell of cordite when the sheriff and the desk clerk eased their way down the hall toward the bathroom.
Must have come from in there. Like I said, Mr. Jensen and Mr. Woods were in there bathing at the time.
Think they could have shot each other in an argument or something?
Oh, no, sir. They were good friends.
Well, you never know.
Tolliver stepped into the smoke and steam-filled room.
Howdy, Sheriff.
Tolliver's eyes opened wide when he saw Cal and Smoke sitting in their bathtubs as calm as you please, drinking coffee and smoking cigars as if nothing had happened.
The clerk here says he heard gunshots.
Tolliver saw Bubba's body sprawled against the wall, blood still seeping from bullet holes in his chest.
That would have been us, I suspect. That gentleman burst in here with guns in his hands and said he was going to kill us. Obviously, he was wrong.
He say anything else?
Did you hear him say anything else, Cal?
I think I might have heard him say ouch when my first slug hit him in the chest.
I don't think so. I got off the first shot.
No, I think it was me, Smoke. Shot him first.
Tolliver reached down and pulled the black cloth mask off Bubba's head, sat back on his haunches, and glanced at Smoke and Cal.
Either of you know this man?
Yeah, the first time we were coming into town, this man and a friend of his braced us and tried to steal our saddlebags.
What happened?
Smoke beat the crap out of his friend, and then he and his friend decided they had better things to do than to mess with us.
Sheriff?
Yes?
Would you mind handing me that towel over there? Both my water and my coffee are getting cold.
Tolliver grabbed a pair of towels from a stack in the corner of the room and flipped one each to Cal and Smoke.
By the way, if he burst in here like you say with his guns out and you two were in the tubs, how is it you had time to get your guns from over there before he shot you?
Our guns weren't over there, Sheriff. Whenever I'm bathing, I always keep my Colt next to the tub on the floor, covered with a towel, just in case of events like this.
You get attacked often while bathing, Mr. Jensen?
Smoke and Cal took their time with the barber, and it was over an hour later when they appeared in Tolliver's office, cleanly shaven and with hair neatly trimmed and clothes that were neat and pressed. Tolliver took a long look at the regulator clock on the wall.
I'm glad you could finally make it.
I wasn't aware there was a time limit, Sheriff. Besides, we told you all we know over at the hotel. And since you're so concerned, Mr. Samuelson is fine.
Have either of you seen or had any dealings with the murdered man since the fight earlier?
The man wasn't murdered, as you say, Sheriff. He was killed while trying to commit a crime. That doesn't make it murder, which, if I'm not mistaken, is a crime itself.
All right, then. Have you seen the dead man since your first altercation with him?
We don't even know his name. We haven't seen hide nor hair of him or his friend since the fight.
The man's name was Bubba Barkley, a well-known figure around Payday.
So do you have any idea why he braced us? It seems a little extreme act just because his friend got his butt kicked a little and Cal took his gun away from him.
No, none at all. The man had no known employment, living on odd jobs like mucking out stables at the livery and sweeping out the saloon to pay his bar bills. In fact, I knew him fairly well, and to my knowledge, he'd never before broken the law or robbed anyone that I'm aware of.
Is that so? Were you close friends, Sheriff?
I didn't say we was friends, Jensen. I said I knew the man. That's an entirely different thing. However, I did just the other day offer him employment as a sheriff's deputy to help guard the town during your friend's trial. So, Barkley didn't say anything about why he was trying to kill you two?
No, he didn't, Sheriff. But I'm sure we'll get some idea what was on his mind when we talk to people that knew him.
Now you listen to me, Jensen. This is my town, and if there's any investigating to do about this, I'll be the one to do it.
Last time I looked, Sheriff, there isn't any law against talking to people. Not even in a podunk like this one. So now, if you're through asking us questions, we'd like to talk to our friend again.
Sure. Go right on in. The door's open.
Smoke stared at him for a moment more, and then they walked out of the room and closed the cell block door behind them. When Pearly saw Smoke and Cal, he jumped to his feet. He finally looked like the old Pearly that they knew, so both men were relieved to see he'd recovered from his earlier injuries.
Hey, Pearly. How you doing?
How the hell you think I'm doing, youngin? They only serve 3 meals a day in this joint.
Aside from that, how's the food?
Well, thanks for what you did, Smoke. The lady who delivers the food said you'd forced the sheriff to get it from the hotel dining room. It sure as hell beats what I was getting before. I even got her to promise to bring in extra helpings of dessert. You got any news about who might have done in the dock?
No, but we found out that there may have been a witness that night. A lady named Rule. Did you see anyone else in the house that night?
No, not that I can recall. Of course, I was kind of busy fighting for my life, and then I passed out, so she could have been standing right there in the room, and I wouldn't have seen her.
Well, don't worry, pal. We'll see that you're cleared of this, and we'll have you back in Big Rock before you know it.
I sure hope so, Smoke. Because I ain't exactly anxious to test those boys' work on the scaffolds.
I tell you what, Pearly. If and I was you, I'd give up on those second helpings of dessert from the hotel dining room.
Why?
Because if and you getting any fatter, your horse Colt ain't gonna be able to carry your fat butt all the way back to Big Rock.
Smoke and Cal walked out of the corridor after talking with Pearly.
You find out anything from your friend, Jensen?
We found out enough to know he didn't kill a doctor. And the man he did kill was trying to kill him.
Now just why would someone want to kill a complete stranger in this town?
That's what I intend to find out, Sheriff. You wouldn't happen to have any ideas on the subject, would you?
What? That's preposterous. Why would I possibly know anything about that?
Well, the man Pearly killed was not only a relative of yours, but it seems he occasionally worked as your deputy. That's a pretty close connection, wouldn't you say? We'll be seeing you again, Sheriff. You can count on it.
After they left the sheriff's office, Smoke told Cal they were headed over to see Sam Hemmings.
Why are we going there?
I need to get a feel for what was said at the trial. It may give us a hint about who really did the killing of the doctor, and why a man who was not only a relative of the sheriff, but who also worked as a deputy might have been trying to rob Pearly.
You mean you don't think it was just because the man was a footpad?
I doubt it, Cal. If Pearly was the sort to flash around a big wad of greenbacks, or sport some fancy watch fobs or diamond stick pins, maybe. But Pearly's just a cowboy, and not a particularly rich one at that. I just can't figure why the man Pearly stabbed would have taken such a chance of breaking into a popular town doctor's house to steal the few dollars an old pocket watch Pearly had.
Even though the job of mayor of a small town like Payday wasn't a full-time job, Mayor Hemmings happened to be in his office when Smoke and Cal arrived. He answered the door himself.
Yes?
Hello, Mayor. I'm Smoke Jensen, and this is my friend, Calvin Woods. We're friends of Pearly's, and we're the ones who brought him to town.
Oh, yes. I've heard of you, Mr. Jensen. Come in, please.
Hemmings sat down, put his elbows on the table, and rested his chin in his hands. Smoke and Cal sat down across the desk from him.
Now, first let me say that I'm very sorry I didn't get your friend acquitted of the charges against him. The evidence against him was just too strong, I'm afraid.
That's one of the things we came to talk to you about, Mayor.
Please, call me Sam. Job isn't all that important in a town this size.
All right, Sam. First off, I would like to know something about this Blackie Johnson that Pearly says he killed because he caught him robbing Pearly. Pearly also says he got the feeling that Johnson was going to kill him, and that the theft of his things was just an afterthought.
You know, I wondered about that myself. Blackie Johnson, though certainly not one of the town's leading citizens, has never really been in trouble before. At least, not jail-type trouble. He's pretty much a drunkard, but he usually sobered up enough to hold down a job doing menial labor, and as far as I know, was never charged with stealing anything before.
So you can't think of any reason he might have to try and kill Pearlie?
Mr. Jensen, you brought your friend into town less than a week before all this happened, and he was unconscious and lying in bed the entire time he was here. No one in town had ever heard of Pearlie before this, and no one could possibly have had any reason to want him dead that I can think of. Hell, far as I know, no one in town even knew anything about him until the killing. Doc wasn't one to shoot his mouth off about his patients. In fact, that was one of the things that worked against Pearlie with the jury. There was just no motive to kill him that I could come up with.
That's right, Sam. I hadn't thought of that until you mentioned it. Just how would anyone have known Pearlie was in town if the doctor didn't talk about it?
That's what I'm trying to tell you, Smoke. Johnson would have had no reason to try and kill your friend. Even if he'd met him before and had some sort of grudge against him, which is highly unlikely, he wouldn't have known he was in town.
What about the telegraph operator? Dr. Bentley and I kept in touch by sending telegraphs back and forth. The operator would have had to have known about Pearlie and that it was me who brought him into town.
Well, that'd be Bob Jacobson. He also owns the general store, but that don't help you much, Smoke. That means there were two men who knew Pearlie was in town, and Jacobson didn't have anything to do with the killings.
Maybe not, Sam. But maybe Mr. Jacobson wasn't as closed-mouthed about the doctor's business as the doctor was.
Well, you may be right there, Smoke. Old Bob does like to gossip a bit, like all general store owners I've ever known. But so what? From what Pearlie tells me, he's just a cowhand on a ranch down in the southern part of the state. Unless he's got a past that's a lot more exciting than that, I still don't see where anyone would care if he was in town or not.
Well, Pearlie does have a past, Sam. He used to hire his gun out to ranchers a long time ago. But I doubt that has anything to do with his present predicament. I think that just might have to do with the fact that he's my friend and employee.
What do you mean?
Sam, I'm sure you know I do have a past. Quite a long and involved one. And I've made more than my share of enemies in the past. Now, I'm starting to wonder if one of them isn't behind all of this.
Now, wait a minute, Smoke. Surely you don't think someone killed the doctor just to get Pearlie hung to hurt you. Isn't that rather, well, complicated?
Well, you're right, Sam. On the face of it, that doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. But it makes more sense than for me to believe that a man I know as well as Pearlie would kill two people to steal a few dollars worth of bills and jewelry, especially when he's just waking up from a serious illness.
Maybe we ought to talk to Bob Jacobson after all.
No, Sam. I think I'll do better talking to Mr. Jacobson by myself.
You won't, do anything rash, will you, Smoke?
Of course not, Sam. You have my word I won't lay a finger on Mr. Jacobson. I won't promise not to scare him just a bit, though.